This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nerds. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya, episode number 486. Welcome to an edition of the Rico Bronya we have not had this season. The Mets salvaging the final game of a series. We will talk about game three. We'll talk about game two. Carlos Mendoza's lineup changes. We'll look ahead to the Dodgers series. I want to start off by saying I just finished watching the New York Knicks game. And because I have a New Year's resolution to be nothing but classy, I'm not going to say anything about the game. Okay. It was a fun basketball game. It was a long basketball game. It delayed the start of this Rico Bronya podcast, but it was an interesting night. That's all I'll say. We'll have more to say at 2 o'clock on WFAN. I got a lot to say at 2 o'clock on WFAN, but in terms of this podcast, I'm going to keep it Metsies. Okay. Nothing to say about what happened to Madison Square Garden last night.
Dude, stop it. Stop it. Get the grin off your face. Okay. You send me a text at 10:22. It's 11:27 right now. At 10:22, I get a text from Evan going, let's get ready. The game's pretty much over.
Yeah.
Let's get the podcast going.
Yeah.
At 10:22. It's 11:27, and we just witnessed that crap, and it's all because of you.
I want to make something clear. When I texted Pete Hoffman, hey, this Knick game is over, let's get the Rico ready to start, I wasn't doing it with nefarious thoughts. I just wanted to expedite the evening. I'm done with the Met game. I was on DVR. I'm live on the Knicks game. The Knicks are cruising to a game one victory. I just wanted to be ready to start the Rico as soon as the game was over. I wasn't overthinking things, and I wasn't trying to jinx the Knicks. So can you get that thought out of your mind? It's not my fault OG missed the big free throw. It's not my fault Nembhard couldn't miss. I mean, don't blame me for this.
I know you too well. I know when you hedge. I know when you're trying to jinx the Knicks. And that 10:22 text was a complete jinx job by Evan Roberts.
Whatever. We will spend many, many more minutes and hours talking about game one Knicks Pacers on WFAN on Thursday. I'll be on with Tiki Barber at 2 o'clock. Let's get to the Mets. This was an important win. I got to tell you, because not that it was going to change their chances of winning the NL East or their chances of making the playoffs or anything extreme. But I say this a lot throughout a baseball season. There are just certain games that feel more important. And considering this is the first mini crisis of the Mets season in terms of how bad the offense has been, in terms of losing a series to the Yankees, possibly getting swept by the Boston Red Sox, and you throw in the Juan Soto stuff, which we will talk about because I've done a lot of thinking about the Juan Soto stuff, a lot of research about the Juan Soto stuff, and I think I know where we're at, but we'll address that a little bit later on. So sitting down to watch the finale of this series, knowing the Mets had an off day on Thursday, knowing they're about to take on the Los Angeles Dodgers, despite all their pitching issues, a murderer's row lineup, this felt like a stop the bleeding moment. This felt like the topic game that could at least quell emotions for a couple of days. Baseball's a long-ass season, and you're going to struggle over the course of a season. The key is, can you not let those bad stretches snowball into something more? And I think if they got swept and all of a sudden you're staring at 1-5 against the Yankees and the Red Sox, and then you pile on the way they lost that finale against Pittsburgh in which the offense was completely limp, I think our worries would be a lot higher. So I did sit down about 2 hours late on DVR because of these early Boston starts, and I do have to get home from doing the show. I sat down with a little bit of worry, a little bit of, all right, this would be a really under the radar because the Knicks are playing, but important victory. So let's start with the fact that Francisco Lindor leads off the goddamn game with a double and they can't get him in. And it starts with Marte. I said this on WFAN. If you didn't hear it, I'll summarize it real quick. I hated this lineup change. I didn't like it. I've said it on the Rico before. If you're going to make a lineup change with the top three guys in this order, those three guys have to bat 1-2-3. You can change the order. I got no problem with that. You want to try, I've suggested Soto 1, Alonso 2, Lindor 3, fine. But to me, I can't take my three best hitters out of the top three spots in the order. I'm not a fan of it. And if you are going to take them out of that spot and move someone into the two hole, which Mendy decided to do before game three of this series, you're really going to take Starling Marte, who's hit 211 this season, who's hit 2222 against lefties, who's a part-time player who most of us don't even want to see playing anyway? That's your choice to bat second? I hated it. I hated it. If it's up to me, I'm not breaking those three guys up. I'd reconfigure it. I suggested maybe you try to take the pressure off of Soto a little bit and just tell him, hey, get on base. That's all that matters. And lead him off. If he hits a few home runs, great. If he doesn't, just get on base. That's your job as a leadoff hitter. Bat Pete 2, Lindor 3. Give Alonso some protection. I don't think, and I don't buy that, boy, Lindor has to lead off because it sparked him last year. Lindor's a tremendous player. I think you could hit Francisco Lindor anyway. He'll be fine. I'm not saying Mendy had to do this, but if you're going to change the lineup, that's what I would have done. If you're going to force feed someone into the two hole, that's not one of those three guys. How could it possibly be Starling Marte? So I did not like this lineup. I wanted to be wrong. In fairness, there was nothing about this game that truly was impacted by the lineup change, except in the first inning when Marte gives you a great at-bat against Garrett Crochet. I'll give him credit for that, fouling a lot of tough pitches off. But what does he do with a runner on second and nobody out? He pops up the shortstop. So we could love the process and we could love the at-bat, but results matter. And the results were a weak pop up the shortstop. And then you've got Juan Soto. Juan Soto, I'm going to just assume, I'm going to agree with Ronnie and Keith that Juan Soto just could not see the baseball coming out of Garrett Crochet's hands. Because otherwise, that was Harden-like. You know, when James Harden quit on the field, those first two at-bats were, what am I doing here? I'm just going to stand here. Now, I know that's not the case. Okay, I know that in all likelihood, he just had a very difficult time seeing the baseball out of Crochet's hands. He's got a herky-jerky windup. He's got to be tough on lefties. But to see Juan Soto, especially with how bad the week has been, off the field, on the field, everything, to see him watch three straight, pretty much right down the middle, with a runner on second and one out in the first inning, was a little disturbing. And then you follow it up with Pete Alonso striking out. So Carlos Mendoza has said, he said it to Tiki and I when he was on with us on Friday. He has said this in his post-game press conferences. Hey, look, some of the at-bats are good. David Stearns even said it. Some of the at-bats with runners in scoring position are pretty good. And some of them suck. With a runner on second and nobody out, eventually a runner on third because Lindor did steal third with two outs. Think about the results. Marte pop up the shortstop. Soto three pitches right down the middle looking. Pete Alonso 3-2 pitch on the corner, strike three. All with runners in scoring position. So in a game that certainly felt a little bit more important, you could not have possibly started it in a worse way. Then you get to the second inning, and you get a leadoff walk by Mark Vientos. You get a rip double by Luis Torrens that I thought for a second off the bat was going to get out. Instead, it bounces off the wall. But hey, good job by Luis. He's running it out. And you know what happens when you run the ball out? You can end up on second base. So you've got second and third, nobody out. This is right on the heels of having a runner on second and nobody out and not scoring. And then we proceed to see Tyrone Taylor swing at the first pitch, pop up the second base. Luis Angel Acuna swing at the first pitch and roll one to third. If you are consuming this game, you're not distracted by the Knicks. I guess at this point, you wouldn't have been distracted by the Knicks because this game started at 6:45. I apologize. I lose all like sight of time because I'm on DVR. So I'm like watching the Met game while the Knick game is going on. So I'm watching both. My eyes are darting between the two tablets right next to each other. And so to me, they're both happening at the same time. They aren't, obviously, because the Met game started a lot earlier. But if you're watching this live or at any point, and right after you have a runner on second, nobody out, you don't score. Now you got second and third, nobody out. And on two pitches, you watched a pop-up and a ground out. You have got to be thinking to yourself, what the hell is going on? Is this actually going to get worse? This is on the heels of the Mets going 0-7 with runners in scoring position, 1-8, 1-7, 1-7, 2-11, and 0-4. So if I could add this up right now, and this goes back to the Pittsburgh series, you are looking at 43 at-bats and five hits, 5-43. And then you throw in the next 5-48. They were 5-48 with runners in scoring position until Brett Beatty came up. And when Brett Beatty came up, I think about what I thought about when I saw him in the lineup, which was, wow, what a pleasant surprise. Not because I thought Beatty would get hits against Garrett Crochet, but Carlos Mendoza, and he admitted this, woke up to what we have been saying, and I don't mean me, I mean all of us have been saying for a few days now, which is Brett Beatty's defense is so good. He has improved so much defensively at third base, and unfortunately, Mark Vientos has gone backwards, that you have to play him at third base, and you have to DH Vientos even in a game against a tough lefty. Because right now, the Mets' margin for error is so small. It's so nil because they're not scoring any runs. I just went through their stats with runners in scoring position. And because of that, you got to make sure your defense is buttoned up. And at this moment, and it's crazy this is the case, but it is the case, Brett Beatty is a far better defensive third baseman than Mark Vientos. So when I saw the Met lineup after I got over being annoyed about Marte batting second, I was pleasantly surprised that Brett Beatty was in this lineup and he was facing a lefty. With that said, I did not have confidence with now two outs that Brett Beatty was going to bail out Acuna and Taylor with a big two-out hit against Garrett Crochet. I was stunned when he ripped that line drive. And usually when I sit there watching Met games, there'll be emotion once in a while, but I'm pretty matter of fact, good and bad. Ah, that sucked. Ah, that's great. Occasionally, special moment, you get pumped up. You jump out of your chair. You could ask my wife. There were two of those moments on this Wednesday night while I was consuming sports. There was the Brett Beatty RBI single against Garrett Crochet in the second inning. And then there was that ball that bounced off the rim high into the air and then went in off the hands of Tyrese Halliburton. And then I soon realized it's a 2, not a 3. And then I had a huge stomach ache because I thought of Kevin Durant. So for anyone who hates my basketball love, which I'm sure 98% of the people do because you're a Knicks fan and I'm a stupid Net fan, I was in a lot of pain after the Halliburton shot because all I could think about was Kevin Durant. That's all I could think about. I was consumed by it. Like, you got to be kidding me. I went over for 5 minutes during that commercial break how my life would have been different if Kevin effing Durant's toe was just a centimeter smaller. Like, everything would be different. I don't know if I'd be doing the Rico right now. I'm just kidding. I'd be doing the Rico right now. Anyhow, back to the Mets. The Beatty RBI single pumped me up. I was very, very excited about it. And the reason I was excited is because it was like, after so much struggle with runners in scoring position dating back all year, but really the end of that Pittsburgh series where they have scored, think about the amount of runs they've scored, 0-2, 3-2, 1-0. That's their run totals. And if you want to go before that, they scored two runs the night before, but they won the game 2-1, so we were happy. So for Beatty to come through with a base hit like that was monstrous. It sucked that Luis Torrens was thrown out at the plate. I honestly thought off the bat, let's not send him. Let's take the one-run lead. You have Lindor coming up. Why risk it? Torrens isn't the fastest guy in the world. Rafaela has a good arm. It didn't feel very deep. But whatever. That's my first guess. The throw was good. Torrens got tagged out. And so, unfortunately, Beatty comes through with this big base hit. But they only score one run. We'll get back to the offense in a few minutes, but let's jump to Tylor Megill. This is a weird one. You know, Tylor Megill needed a good performance. He's had three of them that were really bad. We've already put him on alert. He could lose a rotation spot. And certainly with Paul Blackburn coming back, it's on the table. I'm going to say this was a really good performance by Tylor Megill. It stinks he couldn't get through the fifth inning. I don't love that. But I also love that Carlos Mendoza didn't F around. Because he saw Megill in the fifth inning, third time around the batting order, just walking Devers, saying, you know what? I can't screw around in a 1-1 game. I can't. And so because of that, I'm going to go to my best reliever in the fifth inning in a really tough spot against Alex Bregman. So I don't want to penalize Megill's bounce-back performance by Mendy doing the right thing and being really aggressive with his bullpen. Tylor Megill was a different pitcher in this game. And that's encouraging. This is a decent Red Sox offense. This is a Red Sox offense that's scoring 4.8 runs per game. They're not bad. You have to deal with Rafael Devers. You have to deal with Alex Bregman. You got to deal with a guy like Willier Abreu, who's had a good year, and Jaron Duran. Like, it's a good lineup. And for Megill to come out and be as aggressive as he was and get as many strikeouts as he did, I mean, 10 strikeouts in 4 2/3 innings is not something you expect, including striking out the heart of the order in the fourth inning, a dominant fourth inning. And even the fifth inning that tripped him up, a lot of it was just really bad luck. Nick Sogard, who led off the inning with a base hit, hits a tapper in front of the mound where Megill and Torrens just have bad communication. Carlos Narvaez hits a ball that I thought off the bat, just like Gary Cohen did, Lindor was going to turn it into a double play. And even if he doesn't turn it into a double play, Lindor has to not rush it. He needs to get the force out at second base. Then he hits Rafaela. And then really, and this is the funny part about baseball, the worst pitch or the worst sequence of that fifth inning was Jaron Duran hitting a sacrifice fly that off the bat I thought was a grand slam. I mean, off the bat, didn't we all think that ball was getting out? But he hit it to the wrong part of the ballpark. The wind kept it in slightly, and it turned into a very, very long sacrifice fly. And then he walks Devers, who's a dangerous hitter. So his fifth inning was not horrible. It was really based on bad luck. And so 4 2/3 innings is not normally a performance I want to celebrate, but I actually want to celebrate it in this case. I thought he pitched really well. He ran into the bad luck of the fifth inning, and Carlos Mendoza did the right thing by being aggressive. Even though Megill had struck out Bregman twice, I think Mendy saw how important that fifth inning was. The Mets have already given back the lead. It goes from 1-0 to 1-1. The bases are loaded, and if Alex Bregman comes through with even a base hit, two-run single, that two-run deficit is going to feel like 100 runs. You did not want to fall behind in this game. I didn't want to fall behind in this game. Not everybody can be the Indiana Pacers. You know what I mean? All right, that's it. That's my last reference to anything that happened outside of baseball. My apologies. I'm a bad guy. So, Mendy, that's what you got to do with this bullpen. And that's what you got to do when you have a reliever right now in Oscar Brazoban who is as locked in as humanly possible. And the best part about Brazoban getting through that fifth inning was that Alex Bregman battled and he struck him out on the ninth pitch of the at-bat. And then he comes back, pitches the sixth inning, gets a double play on Sogard, comes back for the seventh and strikes out the side. I mean, Oscar Brazoban, what is going on? With relievers, you almost have to expect that this will not last. But hey, let's enjoy the ride while it's going on. Oscar Brazoban is the president of the Circle of Trust. He goes out and gets 7 outs out of the bullpen. And best of all, it allowed this Met offense to finally have its moment. You go to the seventh inning of this game against the Red Sox bullpen, against Liam Hendricks, who had just gotten a, was it Liam Hendricks? Yeah, Liam Hendricks had come in the sixth inning, and he struck out Alonso, and he struck out Vientos after Cora took Crochet out. Kind of a quick hook on Crochet. I'm not watching enough of him to know if this was the right move or the wrong move, but 85 pitches, he's into the sixth inning. I don't know. I didn't feel like there was a rush to take him out. I know as a Met fan, I was happy he came out, but okay. Not going to sit here and do a John Valentin. That's my random Red Sox. Or Mike Greenwell. Or a Mike Stanley breaking down Red Sox decisions. But Hendricks comes in, gets those two strikeouts, and in the seventh inning of a tie game, you're sitting there waiting, saying this offense eventually has to break out. And Luis Torrens, who is so underrated, and yes, I got emails at thericob@gmail.com. There's a few of them saying, Evan, Luis Torrens needs to.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nerds.
Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Play every day. I don't think it's every day, but he is in the mix as a guy that can't go more than 3 days without playing. So however you want to line this up, Torrens needs to be in the mix, and he pretty much is. He started a game in the Yankee series, the game they won. He started a game in the Red Sox series, wait a second, the game they won. I guess we are noticing a pattern with Luis Torrens. But he had that double in the second inning, and he had the base hit that started the seventh inning. And Tyrone Taylor had a base hit. And then Luis Angel Acuna can't get the bunt down, but at least makes contact and then is able to beat it out for an infield hit. And then the man of the hour, Brett Eugene Aloysius Beatty. Bases loaded, nobody out. Again, Alex Cora goes to the bullpen, goes to a lefty and Bernardino, and there is not a thought in my mind of pinch hitting for him. Why, you ask? Why is there no thought in your mind? Number one, the guy just got an RBI single against Garrett Crochet, one of the toughest left-handers in Major League Baseball. That's number one. Number two, I'm not scared of Brennan Bernardino, should we? And number three, who on the bench is giving you that much of a better chance against the lefty? You got two lefties on your bench as it is with Jeff McNeil and Brandon Nimmo. Both, by the way, do good jobs against lefties, but I'm not in a rush to get Beatty out of the game to go to either of them. Your righties on the bench are Zokar and Alvarez. I don't think either guy's an option. So when Bernardino came in, considering Beatty was 1-for-2 with that RBI single, the only run the Mets scored in this game at this point, he had a stolen base. He continues to play awesome defense at third base. I loved that Mendy stuck with him. And I would have been pissed if he didn't. Again, was I confident he was coming through? No. Wasn't even that I was confident. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I thought he was getting a big hit. But he deserved it. He deserved the opportunity. Because also, if you take the lead, even if you don't take the lead, whatever happens in the bottom of the seventh inning, if Beatty's coming out, you're hurting your defense. Because Jeff McNeil is coming into the game, and now Luis Angel Acuna is moving to third base. And he's not a third baseman. Like, is he terrible? No, but he's not as good right now as Beatty is. And then Brett Beatty lines one into the left field corner, which should have been a two-run double, but Luis Angel Acuna was, I don't know what he was doing, only ends up at second base, but I'm not nitpicking here. Terren scores, Taylor scores, and Brett Beatty does it again. Two hits in this game, drives in three of the five runs, and he does it against a lefty. And let this be a lesson, Carlos Mendoza. On Friday night at Citi Field, the Mets aren't just facing a lefty. They are facing one of the greatest left-handers of our generation. Now, in fairness, that great left-hander of our generation, Clayton Kershaw, is no longer Clayton Kershaw. Brett Beatty needs to play. He needs to play, not because I think he's getting three hits against Kershaw, not because I think he became the lefty slayer, but because his defense is so good, you're a better team when he's out there. And oh, by the way, he's had a couple of hits against lefties. Very, very, very cool moment. And then we've got our dear friend Juan Soto, who to this point was 0-for-3 with three strikeouts on like 10 pitches. So it wasn't an 0-for-3 with three strikeouts, but he's been battling. He didn't take the bat off his shoulder in the first inning and the third inning. I described it earlier as Harden-like. I don't think that was the case, but it looked that way, and sometimes perception is reality. And then he strikes out on three pitches in Garrett Crochet's final batter. He comes up in a spot where he could just blow this thing open. And off the bat, I thought it was gone. Maybe I thought it was gone because Juan Soto posed again, and he is quite the poser when he hits the ball deep. But I'm not going to complain about this one. I thought that sacrifice fly was important. It turns a two-run lead into a three-run lead. He also hit it to one of the deepest part of the ballparks. And it was another example. I hate to admit this, or I really don't hate to admit it. I'm just going to admit it, where Soto hitting a little bit of bad luck. I mean, he hit the ball a ton. And he drove the run in. That's the most important thing. He could have bounced into a double play. We've seen that before. He could have struck out. We've seen that before. And instead, he hit the ball about 390 feet, and he drove the run in. Was I annoyed he didn't run the ball out? No, I'm not, because there's differences. I'm never going to sit here and scream and yell that guys need to run out every ball. Would I like that? Sure. I mean, would I love if a player did that? Absolutely. But it's not realistic. It's just, and no one does it. Very few guys actually do that. The issue I had with Soto was the specific plays we're talking about. This play was either going to be an out or it was going to be a home run. Or I guess it was going to be dropped by the center fielder. Like, I don't think there was going to be much of an in-between. So I know I'll get a lot of hate emails for that, but I'm not freaking out over Soto posing and not running. The monster thing is different because you have to know, and I think Soto does know from his experience playing at Fenway Park, which isn't just the year against with the Yankees, but just in general, like the Nationals have played at Fenway Park. He knows the deal. He knows if you hit the green monster, you better be busting it or there's a really good chance you're not getting to second base. And he would have seen it in that game with what happened with Pete Alonso. So I think Soto getting that sacrifice fly, at least for now, deep breath. And really, the Mets being able to score runs is the deep breath. Francisco Lindor hits a home run. That was great to see because the Mets hadn't hit a home run in about a year. Well, really, they hadn't hit a home run since the Pittsburgh series. Kind of crazy to think that they went to Yankee Stadium and did not hit a home run. They went to Fenway Park and until the very, very end, didn't hit a home run until Lindor went deep. But five runs. It feels like an offensive orgy. And it was backed up by a wonderful effort by this Met bullpen. We mentioned Waskar Brazoban, who got the 7 outs. A really good bounce back performance by Reed Garrett, who had all those control issues on Saturday against the Yankees. He comes in, he works around a Rafael Devers single, doesn't walk anybody, picks up a strikeout, nice clean eighth inning. And then Edwin Diaz, who needed to come in this game. Mets have an off day, and Diaz hadn't pitched since the previous Saturday. So you're looking at almost a week without pitching. So I think this is a game Edwin Diaz is pitching no matter what. Cleans it up in the ninth inning, and the Mets get themselves a very important victory because the night before was just death. And it really was. You know, Clay Holmes goes out there, and he battles, walks a couple of guys, gets through the first inning, puts a couple of guys on him a second inning, gets through the inning, puts two guys on him a third inning, gets through the inning. And then when he gives up the two home runs in the fifth inning to, of all people, Carlos Narvaez, and then eventually Rafael Devers, you feel like it's just too much because of how bad this offense is. And look, the biggest problem with Tuesday, why I am going to write Tuesday down, game two of the series against the Red Sox, I'm putting it down on my little chart as one of the worst losses of the season. I keep that running list. And the reason why this game is up there as one of the worst losses of the season is that you get such a good solid outing out of Clay Holmes. You get Walker Buehler out of the game because he couldn't believe that Mike Esterbrook missed a pitch that was right down the middle and he gets ejected. So you've got the Red Sox, who the night before had to use four relievers, going to their bullpen in the third inning, and you manage four base hits and you can't score a run? Can't happen. Just can't happen. Like Tuesday night, game two of this series was the most pathetic loss of the season. Which is why winning the finale and salvaging this thing was so damn important. Let's go through all their missed opportunities. That'll depress you. Two on, nobody out. Or I'm sorry, two on, one out in the second after Buehler hits Vientos and walks McNeil. Alvarez, strike three down the middle. Brett Beatty, fly out to left field. They get that opportunity in the third after Lindor got hit, stole second. Soto is in the middle of that at-bat when Buehler got ejected. And you know what? He lost his mind. He was right for losing his mind. It was a pitch that was down the middle. For whatever reason, Mike Esterbrook couldn't see because I guess the catcher wasn't framing it for him. So he couldn't tell. Buehler loses his mind. He gets ejected. But you got two on now, one out, and Brennan Bernardino in the game. You're into the Red Sox bullpen. And Alonso grounds out, and Nimmo flies out. You get a leadoff double in the fourth inning from Vientos. McNeil got absolutely robbed, so I'm not going to rip him and advance the runner. Alvarez hits a little ground ball to second base, and Brett Beatty hits in a bad luck by lining out. Lindor gets caught stealing in the fifth, and then after that, they basically didn't have any opportunities. I guess Lindor bouncing into a double play in the seventh inning, which he didn't run that ball out either. So if we're paying attention to who's running balls out, let's be honest, it's not like everybody's doing it. But that was such a lifeless, pathetic offensive effort. You know, I heard Mendy say a couple of times, look, we've run into good pitchers. Paul Skeens is really good. Carlos Rodon is really good. Max Fried is really good. That's all fine. It's true. Sometimes you are going to run into good pitching. The excuse for Tuesday's what? Walker Buehler for 7 outs. Brennan Bernardino, who pitched the night before. Garrett Whitlock, Justin Wilson, who pitched the night before, Greg Weissert, Justin Slayton, who pitched the night before, and Aroldis Chapman, who didn't even sweat. And Aroldis Chapman is a known sweater. It was beyond pathetic. But a credit to this team, a credit that the offense was able to respond in the finale of this series. And I know I said this a lot in 2024. This is the first time I'm going to say this in 2025. When you salvage the last game of a series, this was a lot in April and May of last year when the Mets were struggling. I would say, hey, hopefully they can build on this. Hey, hopefully this turns into something. And that's where I stand with this offense. That's where we have to stand. Hopefully it turns into something. Hopefully scoring five runs and hitting a home run and winning a game against the Red Sox can lead to success. The good news is, yes, they're facing the Dodgers. The Dodgers are ravaged by pitching injuries, and nobody they're facing over the weekend intimidates you. You should be able to hit Clayton Kershaw. This is not Clayton Kershaw from a couple of years ago. You should hit Tony Gonsolin. You should hit Landon Knack. Like, I think the Mets have the pitching edge in every game in this series. So, yes, it's the Dodgers, and they're intimidating, but you should be able to win games against them. Then the White Sox come in. Then the Rockies come in. So the Mets have a chance to get themselves right. And let's hope that the finale of this series against the Red Sox, they were able to do it. I don't want to ignore Clay Holmes' performance. I thought he was really good. I think considering he had the control issues early, walking two guys, throwing a wild pitch, the hit batsman in the second inning, what you ask is, can you survive it? And can you give your team innings? And what Holmes did, much like Senga did the night before, is he gave you six. And in this modern age, six is a win. That's what we need from Tyler McGill. I mean, for crying out loud. Instead of 4 2/3 innings, can you give me six? And Clay Holmes was at least able to deliver that. So quality start by Clay Holmes, kept him in the game. The problem is the offense was terrible. Now let's have some fun, Hoff. Let's have some fun. Because there are a couple of Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series candidates. And we're about to go through them. But before we do, celebrate. Celebrate the fact that the New York Mets won the finale of this series. Celebrate whatever is happening in other worlds of sports. Celebrate your highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser. Light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. Whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name, a new tradition served chilled. Imported from Japan, the official sake of Rico Brogna. Enjoy responsibly. We have the I'm the man now, Rico, star of the series. Let me see. I have my running list of it. Edwin Diaz, Pete Alonso, Max Kranich, Pete Alonso, Kodai Senga, Pete Alonso, Lindor, Francisco Alvarez, Tyrone Taylor, Pete Alonso, Juan Soto, Brett Beatty, Brandon Nimmo, and Waskar Brazaban. So, Hoff, I got two guys, and I don't want to ignore Senga or Holmes or even McGill. Like, all the starters contributed to a degree, but I think it comes down to Brett Beatty versus Waskar Brazaban. I think those are the clear options in this case. First of all, where do you stand, and we'll go through the cases for both guys.
I think that it was more impactful for Brazaban to be reliable and to pitch, you know, multiple innings in that this latest victory. Brett Beatty, yeah, I'm happy he came through. That was good. But there's too many times in the series where he went over. So that defensively, defensively, I got to give him his props. That part of his game has definitely developed in a good way where, honestly, you're right, Vientos has got to go to DH. Brett Beatty's your third baseman for now. But so that's where I would lead to Brazaban. I think that his impact was more dominant because he didn't allow anything. He was able to stabilize the game.
Yeah. So Brazaban and what he did in the one game they won was hero worthy. Like I've said before, the Rico star of the series comes from my scorebook where I pick a star of every game. And in the case of this Met game, the star of the game is Waskar Brazaban. Like, I am going to write it in with my pen at some point. That's the star of the game. So you could argue, well, if he's the star of the game in your scorebook, doesn't that make him the Rico, I'm the man now star of the series? I'll tell you why I lean Brett Beatty, and then we'll have a fine discussion to figure it out. I also in my scorebook write down GP for a very good play, AP for an amazing play. I wrote that down 5 times in this series for Brett Beatty, 5, including a couple of really good bare hand plays. He had a tremendous defensive series. And if he doesn't have a tremendous defensive series, he doesn't start game 3. And if he doesn't start game 3, and let's just say it's, I don't know who it would be. I guess Jeff McNeil probably would have been the guy, because then he would have started at, but I can't even assume that actually, because it could have been Nimmo. It could have just been Marte's DHing, Nimmo's playing left, and Vientos is playing third base. So I can't even tell you who would have started if it wasn't Brett Beatty. But if it's not Brett Beatty, we don't get the huge RBI single in the second inning. If Brett Beatty doesn't start, we don't get the 2-run single in the seventh inning. We don't get those 3 runs, which were the first 3 runs of the game. It was 3-1 Mets because of Beatty. They added the 4th on the Soto sack fly. They added the 5th on the Lindor home run. So when you factor in that, yes, they lost the first 2 games of the series, but Brett Beatty had a positive impact defensively, not offensively. I'm not citing his offensive numbers because he didn't do anything until this game. But when you combine, he impacted both of those other games with his defense, essentially won the game with his bat in the finale. It's close. It's another one of those Ricos where it's very, very close between 2 guys, but I actually lean Beatty slightly above Waskar Brazoban. But it's close. Two big stars. Those are the 2 clear guys. I don't think there's really anybody else that should even be mentioned.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing too, is it's not, again, we go to Brazoban. I mean, he had this impactful, you know, couple innings in this win, but I mean, the other games, nothing really occurred, you know. And Beatty, you're saying, like, even the defensive plays were big, but they still lost the game. I guess it was a blah series. That's what sucked. There was nothing exciting about it. The offense has been crap. The defense, I maybe looked a little bit better, but not really. I mean, it's been a really rough go of it. I'm glad that they won, because otherwise we would have just murdered this team. We would have murdered Soto over and over and over and anybody else attached to it.
Well, with that said, before we decide on Brazoban versus Brett Beatty, the net negative of this series, since there are so many options.
I got to be honest with you. It's got to be Soto. He's done nothing. He continues to do nothing. And even when he does something, he doesn't do it well.
Yeah, I'm going to surprise you with this one. I think it's Pete Alonso.
All right, that's fine too.
I know you guys are not used to that. You're like, really? You're going to turn on Pete? I think when you look at, he did nothing offensively too. I mean, really, no one did anything offensively until the very end of this series. Lindor hitting a home run, sure. But there wasn't a lot there. So if you go through the numbers, no one produced. But the reason I'm going to give it to Pete Alonso, he hit the ball off the monster, got thrown out, went 1-for-3 in game 1. He went 0-for-4 in game 2. And he went 1-for-5 in game 3, and he was 0-for-3 with runners in scoring position. But he also made that dopey error. He also had the bad defense with the flip. By the way, we have gotten a lot of emails. People do not like the net negative. They want us to get rid of it. I've gotten many people saying it's too negative, even in series victories. We don't want to hear about it. So the net negative, I'm going to say it's Pete Alonso, but it's on life support. The people don't want to hear it. As far as the Rico star of the series is concerned, I'm sorry, you did not convince me. As great as Waskar Brazoban was in this game, and he was unbelievable, I got to give it to Brett Beatty. I just think that the Mets needed that punch offensively. They haven't gotten it. And as great as Brazoban was getting out of that jam with Alex Bregman, if the Mets don't score any runs, they're not winning. So as great as he was, let's have a party. You needed the Brett Beatty clutch hits. You needed that to win the game. So for the second time this season, congratulations to Brett Beatty. He also won it in the Chicago series when they won 2 out of 3. So listen to this for a second. There are only 2 star of the series. Actually, let me fix that.
There are
three guys that have been multiple Rico Star of the Series winners. Pete Alonso, who's done it four times, Francisco Lindor, who's done it twice, and now Brett Beatty, who's done it twice. So congratulations to Brett Beatty as a two-timer in the Rico I'm the Man Now Star of the Series.
I forget, have we had Juan Soto even for one?
Yeah, I gave it to Soto in the Arizona series, in which he went 3-for-9 with 2 home runs, but got on base 7 out of 13 times. It was controversial because there were many Met fans who believed Lindor was robbed and should have won it for the third time. So even Soto's one victory, the Rico Star of the Series, comes in.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds.
Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Controversy. Now, let me get to a lot of your emails. A lot of it is about Juan Soto, and then I will give you my opinion on Juan Soto. Walter writes, Evan, why is Soto being treated with kid gloves? If Lindor or Alonso were playing as bad as Soto, we would not stop hearing about it. You and Hoff would be bashing him or bashing them like you've done in the past. But why is Soto escaping the criticism? Is it because they feel he's fragile and can't handle it? If this was any other player, he would be sat or moved down in the lineup. Moving one spot is not a real move. His name or the back of the baseball card should not be the overriding factor. The eye test is what should be used, and the results of that say something needs to be done. He looks lost and confused at the plate, and at times looks like he's giving up or just doesn't care. He needs to get out of his own head and stop letting other people live there rent-free. How do you think this needs to be handled? Walter, I completely disagree with you. First of all, we're ripping Juan Soto. We are. We're criticizing Juan Soto. If what you're looking for is us to say something stupid, like I regret signing him, or he sucks, or he can't handle New York, you're not going to get that, because that's insane to think this early into his Met tenure. And we know better than that based on all the guys that have struggled in their first years here. So if that's your idea of criticism, then you're right. You're not going to hear it. But how many times have we said he's not hitting? We talked about his lack of hustle. We've ripped him. I almost think people need like these extreme opinions to think that it's an actual rip. He's not performing well. He needs to be better. His first two at-bats on Wednesday look like he gave up. I don't think he gave up. It looks like he gave up. So that's not treating someone with kid gloves. We would be stupid to come out here and actually think, I just can't handle New York. Or he doesn't want to be a Met. He sucks. This is a disaster. It's 50 games. I'm not happy with his production. I've made that very clear on every Rico. But that's not the same as saying, well, you're not ripping him. We are ripping him. The hell more do you want? And I disagree. I would not bat him fifth or sixth or eighth. And the Mets didn't do that with Francisco Lindor. Did they do that in 2021? I have to go look back. Did they ever drop him in the batting order to like seventh to send him a message? I don't think that ever happened. Like, you let guys try to figure things out. And I don't think they were dropping Soto to send a message. I think it was simply, hey, we're not scoring runs. Let's change the lineup up. Let's try something different.
I just want to say something because I 100% agree with you. And Walter, you're not going to get that from us because, again, I never said this when Lindor was struggling or when he has struggled in April. I've always said the guy at the end of the day is going to put up his numbers. And at the end of the day, you're going to be happy that he's on your team. So I'm not going to sit here and completely just say, this is the worst thing in the world. I can't believe we signed this guy. What a regret. Plus, the fact is, it's not like Juan Soto has never struggled before. I made this comment a couple years ago, and I got ripped by BT and Tiki, by the way, for this, when I compared Daniel Vogelbach to Juan Soto. And I said,
yeah, you took that from the Rico.
Well, but we discussed it together. We said Daniel Vogelbach is having a better 2 months than Juan Soto is. It's just a fact.
I have a project for you. I don't know if you could pull this one off. Can you find that discussion from the Rico Brogna back in 2022 where we were comparing Daniel Vogelbach's stretch versus Juan Soto's stretch? Because we've referred to this a lot, and I know you brought it up on the air because Tiki's mentioned it to me a lot. And I'm like, yeah, we brought that up on the Rico where we basically, and again, we're not comparing Daniel Vogelbach to Juan Soto.
No,
it was simply that Soto was struggling upon his trade to San Diego. And when you took his numbers over a certain sample size, whatever we were doing, his numbers were similar to Vogelbach's. So we're going to try to find that. If you can't find it, I'll try to find it too. We're going to on a research project to find that discussion from an old Rico Brogna. Real quick, before we continue with your emails, in 2021, Francisco Lindor's first year with the New York Mets, he batted in three spots in the batting order. He led off four times. It didn't go well. He was 1-for-14. He batted second 107 times, and he batted third 11 times. That's it. So this idea that, well, when Lindor struggled, we dropped him in the order. Not really. Didn't happen. J.P. Wecker writes, Soto is not elite. He may have good numbers in the past. At the moment, he is not elite. Gary, Keith, and Ron should stop calling him that. Well, his track record is that he's elite. He's also a mess right now. He's slumping. So what do you want them to say? Bradley Goldberg writes, Soto needs a standing ovation on Friday night. It's in his head. I think coming back to city and getting just a lot of love off the bat will help. I do think the Met fans may do that. I think that's certainly possible. But I'll tell you this. If his first at-bat ends with a weak ground out or a double play ball or a lack of a big hit, I think we are at the point in this season and at the point in his tenure where the Met fans are going to turn. Now, should I use this bully pulpit known as the Rico Brogna to say don't boo him? I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to boo him. I'm not a booer. But I'm also not going to lecture Met fans on what they should do. You spend $200 a ticket. You're at Citi Field on a Friday night. You're frustrated. You have every right to boo. The guy's been a disappointment this season. Does it do any good? No. No. It's not like it's going to make him try harder. Leo writes, did you notice something? When Juan Soto hit that sacrifice fly, he stood in the box and admired it. Does this schmuck ever learn? Clayton Caldwell has his votes on the Rico star of the series and the net negative. He says the star of the series is Master Beatty. It's a good nickname there, Clayton. I may use that. Brett Beatty, the net negative, Juan Soto. Graham Mitchell writes, Brett Beatty is the star of the series. Undoubtedly. We had one good game and he shined in it, getting both hits with runners in scoring position against lefties, no less. There's really no reason he shouldn't get some serious run at third at this point and force Mark Vientos to DH. Side note, Soto is getting booed is unfortunately inevitable, and I'm not even a booer. Soto getting that sack fly is like hitting a nice shot en route to a par on the 18th hole of a horrible round of golf. That one that keeps you coming back to, so they say, he looks lost. I don't understand the golf reference. No, I'm just kidding. I as little as I know about golf, I do get that golf reference. I think that even if Soto hit a home run in that at-bat, which would have been nice, I don't think it changes the fact that Met fans are on high alert. And let's address this. I've seen enough videos. I've had them sent to me. I've looked at it myself. Comparisons of Soto last year with the Yankees or Soto 2 years ago with the Padres. Let's just admit something. And I'm not telling you what it means yet. Let's just admit basic facts. Sometimes when you have uncomfortable conversations, you just got to go through the simple things we could all agree on. So let's agree on this. For whatever reason that I cannot answer, Juan Soto is not looking thrilled on a baseball field. He's not playing with the same emotion he played with the Yankees last year or even before that with San Diego. He has not shuffled this season. Do I care about his shuffling? No, I'm just saying, let's at least accept that for whatever reason, he doesn't look thrilled on a baseball field, and it started probably before this slump. Like, it started early. Like, you didn't see a lot of that fun, love, and stuff early in the season. If we could just admit that and say, okay, that's true, then we could try to figure out the why. And let's start off by saying this. The why doesn't necessarily mean he hates being here. The why doesn't necessarily mean he regrets signing here. That's the most extreme thing one can jump to. It could be a lot of things that aren't even that big of a deal. Like, for example, let's start with something that none of us would even care about, but you should care about because Juan's a human. Maybe something's going on in his personal life. Maybe. Number two, maybe he doesn't feel right at the plate. And this is the thing I've been suggesting for a while, that he's not shuffling, he's not smiling, he's not having fun because he feels something is off. And he's a confident player. And when he doesn't have that confidence, he's not going to be doing the normal things he does. Maybe, I mean, it could be a million different things. We could sit here and do fan fiction all day. I don't know the reason. I'm not going to sit here wondering if he likes being a Met or not, because quite frankly, it doesn't matter. He signed a 15-year contract. He's on the team. He's going to try. I don't believe that those strikeouts to start the Wednesday game was him not trying. Juan Soto wants to be a Hall of Famer. He wants to be considered the modern-day Ted Williams. He's not going to give at-bats away. I think he just had a really tough time seeing a guy he hasn't seen a lot in Garrett Crochet. But it is okay as a Met fan to say two things. Number one, he clearly doesn't look the same. He doesn't look the same at the plate, but he also doesn't look the same with his shtick, with what we're used to seeing. But we can also say that that may not be something like he doesn't want to be a Met. Two things can be true. We don't have to deny that things look different, because it's true. We can admit it, but we also don't have to jump to some extreme conclusion on the why. Does that make sense? Did I explain that very well on what's going on with Juan Soto? Oh, I'll throw this into you as well. So the other day on The Fan, a guy called in and said, hey, Soto hates being a Met, you know, played up that shtick. Because even in San Diego, when he was slumping, because remember, he had a bad year in 2022. That's what led to that discussion we had about Daniel Vogelback. He would shuffle and he would smile all the time. He's not doing that now. And I said to the caller, I don't even know if that's true. I wasn't watching Juan Soto every day in San Diego. What was he doing when he was struggling? So Sean Morash on our show called up some friends he has in San Diego in sports talk radio to kind of pick their brain and say, hey, guys, what was Soto like in San Diego? What was the deal in San Diego when he was slumping? And you ready for this? One of the big sports talk radio controversies in San Diego around Juan Soto was that they didn't like that he was shuffling while struggling. That was a big controversy. So here we are in New York saying, hey, you're struggling. Shouldn't you be shuffling? You're not happy. While in San Diego, they were pissed off that he was shuffling while they were struggling. I know that was like a, that was a word salad right there. So imagine Soto, who is not produced right now. He's not having a good year. We all admit that. We all know that. His OPS is dipping towards sevens. Imagine if he was shuffling all the time and then striking out looking. Wouldn't that also be an issue? Like, wouldn't that be the big controversy in sports talk radio? AW writes, were you thinking of pitching a well-rested Edwin Diaz in the eighth inning with the Red Sox best hitters coming up and an off day tomorrow? Garrett got the job done, obviously, but we're about the process here at the Rico, so I figure I'd mention it. Also, I'm pretty sure Soto pimped his sack fly in the eighth. He's a great player and we'll grow to love him, but damn, dude, read the room. You know, AW, the read the room part's the best part. Because at the end of the day, I didn't mind it. I didn't care about it. But you're right. In the context of the discussion around them, the read the room moment would be not to pose on a sacrifice fly. I thought in the eighth inning, at the time, it's 4-1. So it is a save situation. I thought in the eighth inning, go to Reed Garrett, which is usually not what I would normally say. Normally, I would agree with you of just go to Edwin Diaz, but I'm being honest. This is what I was thinking. Go to Reed Garrett, and if the tying run comes to the plate, don't mess around. Go to Diaz. That was my thought, which is backwards from what I usually think because it was Duran, Devers, and Bregman coming up in the eighth inning, and I have always been a big fan of, hey, use your best reliever against their best hitters. Reading the email, I feel really good about the Beatty decision, Hoff. Everyone agrees. Brett Beatty is the easy, I'm the man now. The net negative is Juan Soto. This is from Sean. Sean writes, there's no question it's Juan Soto. His first three at-bats were absolutely dreadful, striking out three times on 10 pitches and looking completely befuddled. Miss me with the sack fly, he added later. Have you ever seen a player look more lost at the plate, let alone a player of his caliber? I can't believe what we're watching with Soto right now. I could care less about this missing the Yankees narrative. I think it's overblown and exaggerated because he's just flat out terrible right now. Hopefully this will be in the rearview mirror soon, but I'm not holding my breath. Mike Piazza said the other day, this is like a rite of passage. So right. He's so right. Carlos Beltran is apparently talking to Juan Soto about this. At least that's what Carlos Mendoza hinted at in his pregame on Wednesday, that Beltran's been very hands-on with this team, has talked to a lot of guys in the room, including Juan Soto, about this transition. What we need to do, it's very, very important to not think of last year with the Yankees as his welcome to New York moment, because this is a different New York. This is a here's $765 million New York. Here is a you're going to be here for 15 years New York. And with that comes very, very high expectations. And so I think the pressure he's facing, which I think a lot of us assumed he wouldn't face because he spent a year in New York and had great success, is similar to what Beltran had. It is. It's the start of his Met career is similar to Beltran's. And you could argue Lindor's. And it took those guys time. Now, that's bad news because in Beltran's case, he didn't really kick it in until the following year. And in Lindor's case, it was also the following year. I hope that that's not the same with Juan Soto, that he's going to be mashing and comfortable by June. But the reason why I don't fully panic about this is a disaster, it's a bad contract, the Mets screwed up, is because we've seen Met history. We've seen baseball history. And not just the Jason Bays of the world, but the ones where they work out. All right, so a couple of roster stuff. Paul Blackburn is on his way back. I think the way I'd handle this right now is I'd add him to the bullpen. I don't think the Mets need to add him to the rotation until they really need to. And as we've talked about a few times here on the Rico, because of the off days that they have, this is not a rush. This is not something they have to do very quickly. They're about to have an off day. They're having an off day. And then on Friday, they open up a three-game series with the Los Angeles Dodgers and then three games against the White Sox and then another off day. So only one guy is going to have to pitch on regular rest, and that guy is Griffin Canning. So unless the Mets don't want Griffin Canning on regular rest, and then they could insert Paul Blackburn next Wednesday against Chicago, they can keep him in the bullpen and keep this rotation. Then when they come out of it, they have a longer stretch of games. They go Colorado three in a row at home, go right to LA for four, and then right to Colorado for three. So it's 10 consecutive games on 10 consecutive days. That's clearly where Paul Blackburn is going to enter the rotation. So I think you add him, he's your long man for about a week, and then eventually, probably in the middle of, I mean, you can really add him wherever you want, but probably in the middle of the Los Angeles series, Paul Blackburn will be the sixth starter. Unfortunately, when you look at the minor leagues, Brandon Sproat has really struggled. McLean's second start at AAA was not great, not as good as his first. So we keep an eye on the kids in the minor leagues and see if anyone's going to bang the wall down. But you also have Sean Manaea, who's now throwing bullpen sessions, and Frankie Montas. So the Mets have, once Blackburn's back, six starting pitchers and then potentially eight if they could get Montas and Manaea back. The other thing to keep an eye on is Ronnie Mauricio. This is the first time, Hoff. I know you've talked and asked about him a lot. I now would like to put the Rico Brogna audience on Ronnie Mauricio alert, because he has been activated. He's no longer on rehab. He's performing at AAA, and the Mets need a jolt offensively. And so I can very well see a situation sooner rather than later where Ronnie Mauricio is here and maybe DHing for this team.
That makes me feel amazing. That gives me a sports Woody. Let's put it that way. That honestly, as soon as I heard him hit a home run yesterday, I was like, this is great. This is, and he's in AAA. He's back up top. He's in the bigger leagues now. And then he went back to back days with home runs. I'm like, this guy's ready. He needs to be here. It's don't worry about putting him at, can he field the ball? Just get his bat in the lineup, because right now, I mean, everyone is basically anemic at the moment. Even Beatty, though he had two hits today, you look at his lineup, or you look at his game log over the past like 10, 15 games, there's like two or three games where he's had a decent day. He did that game in Chicago, sure, was what, May 10th? But like, he's had like four games in the past 15 that he's hit the ball. Otherwise, he does nothing.
Yeah, I think the plus of Beatty right now is his defense, which leads to the Mauricio question being, where would he play if the Mets want to insert that bat? Now, they've got options. He's been playing second base, shortstop, and third base in the minor leagues. So obviously, you could stick him at second base, and Acuna could be more of a utility player with that speed off of the bench and maybe a late inning defensive replacement, or DH. I mean, DH is right now kind of opened. DH is becoming Vientos' job right now, the longer that Beatty plays third base. I still think Mauricio's got to tear it up, and then the Mets are going to have to look at their roster and say, okay, who needs to be replaced? I am going to remind Mets fans something about Starling Marte, because I know he's the guy you look at and say, just DFA Starling Marte. He is very close to Juan Soto. And not that you're letting Juan Soto GM the team. This is not a scenario where Soto's not going to let you get rid of him. But if you are concerned about his adjustment, and there was an SNY article written a couple days ago about how Marte had to convince Soto, hey, this is what we do here when you hit a home run, do the picture thing. And then Soto did it, but he was kind of coaxed by Starling Marte. I think you're seeing how important he is in that room. So before anyone just rushes to DFA Starling Marte, this is a locker room that doesn't have J.D. Martinez, a locker room that doesn't have Jose Iglesias. It has Starling Marte. And I think there's a value to that. So I don't think he's necessarily the guy that gets sent out. By the way, Jacob deGrom pitched at Yankee Stadium, was utterly brilliant. He's had a wonderful year. You got to see it live. Did Jake get any kind of reaction when he was announced?
I stood up. I rocked my Jacob DeGrom jersey like an idiot. And I felt good, but it was dude, it was so cold. It was so piss poor. It was raining and stuff like that. Not much of a reaction, but I'll tell you this much, man. He's still electric. He's still a beast. You know, first inning, he got into a little bit of trouble because basically, I mean, the first talk about a guy who's so accurate, who's so on point. His first nine pitches, eight of them were strikes. And then he gets up to Judge, and he's careful. He was careful around him. I think he ended up walking Judge, and then the next guy got on base too. But he got out of the inning with no problem. And there was even, and get this, there was even a point in time where a ball came back at him, hit him in the leg, and he recovered it, threw it to first base underhand, mind you, and it went to the first baseman, and then walked off, not gingerly, and he went back on the mound.
How about that?
Next inning. I mean, it was like, you know what? If the Rangers need to trade him at the deadline, I'd be first line up saying, let's go. Let's bring him in. Dude, his ERA is, what, back to 2.3 or something like that?
He's unbelievable. He's had a great year. You made a prediction when we did our Rico MLB prediction podcast. You picked him to win the Cy Young, and I thought you were crazy because I just didn't think they would give him an opportunity to pitch. Well, he threw seven innings in this game against the Yankees, threw over 100 pitches. They're letting him pitch, and so far he's healthy. There is something I'm kind of annoyed about. So when Jake was at his height of success, but starting to break down 2020, 2021, and even upon his return in 2022. And I'm not sure I ever said it on the Rico. I definitely said it on the Fan. And I certainly remember saying it to Beningo a few times. I would wax poetic about DeGrom and I would say, but it concerns me with the velocity he throws with and how often he throws it. And it doesn't feel natural. And he started to break down and I could never prove it, but I was always worried that he was breaking down because of that. And now it's accepted. DeGrom, in his pregame, or at least not pregame, but earlier in this series against the Yankees, talked about it and said, yeah, I'm pitching differently. I can't go max velocity every time. And I'm like, I'm not a pitching coach. What the hell do I know? I'm just a fan. If I was screaming this 5 years ago, how come no one around the Mets or even Jake himself didn't realize that throwing 96 mile per hour sliders is not normal. And while it's unhittable, it's not sustainable. But I'm gonna set this up for the next Rico Bruni because I don't have the audio with me right now, but Sal was doing it. Sal Licata was on Baseball Night in New York with Andy Martino and John Harper. I think those are the three guys. And they were having a discussion on if DeGrom should have his number retired. And it's not even about that. But Sal is the host said, so Andy Martino, what'd you think of the DeGrom era? And Andy Martino, who I've grown to not hate, like I've grown to like him. He's a good reporter. Right? You know what? I know a lot of Met fans don't like him. I put it this way. I respect Andy Martino, okay? I'm about to take a massive dump on him, but I respect him. Andy Martino proceeds to spend 3 minutes just bitching about Jacob DeGrom. Well, you know, when I think of Jacob DeGrom, I think of him always getting hurt. I think of him denying Sandy Alderson, saying he has a partially torn UCL, him always coming out of games, always checking the MRI. And I'm like, that's what you think of? Like, this guy's one of the greatest pitchers in the history of the franchise. And what you wanted to do in this discussion was take a massive dump on him? I don't understand that. And it's a part of why, like, I respect reporters, but it always feels personal. It always feels like there's an agenda that you're just not telling us. Because for you to spend, I'm going to play the audio on the next Rico Bronya. I'll send it to you off and we'll discuss it because I do want to be fair to him. Let people decide. But I was like, what the hell's wrong with you? Like, did he like say something inappropriate to you once or something? did he slap you? Like what? It just sounded so personal. Like, yeah, you did this, you did that. I'm like, most Met fans don't view Jacob DeGrom that way. They may be frustrated by him breaking down at the end of his career. Sure. I mean, yeah, but no one views him that way. And so I'm not over it because these people aren't over it. The shitting on Jacob DeGrom has continued since the day he was gone. And it's just odd to me. So on the next Rico Bronya, we'll play that audio and analyze. I can promise you that.
You know, it's weird because I think that it's more DeGrom didn't give context to many things. Like, he didn't really give a lot. I, you know, then there's certain guys that I feel like certain reporters that are looking for something. And if you're not going to give me what I'm looking for, then screw you type of deal. It's kind of like the Ike Davis, Lucas Duda thing. And I remember this came out years after the fact that reporters, I forgot which reporter said it, but there was reporters that said they gave Ike Davis much more higher praise because he was nice to him. That was it.
That's crazy.
And I'm like, Ike Davis, I couldn't understand how Lucas Duda isn't getting more love, but we're praising Ike Davis, give him an extra chance. Why? Because he said hi? Because he gave you more time?
Yeah.
After he struck out three times in a row? Like, screw that.
No, you're right. It's strange. It's why his whole thing, and again, we'll play it on the next Rico, just reeked of reporters have agendas. And that bothers me. Like, listen, you may not agree with anything I say here. You may love what I say, hate what I say. I promise you, I got no freaking agenda. That's why I named Pete Alonso the net negative, despite everyone wanting it to be Juan Soto. Either way, series coming up against the Los Angeles Dodgers. We will always provide Rico Bronya's when the series is over. And of course, we'll pop in with some surprises throughout series. That's why you should subscribe wherever you download your podcast. Make sure you don't miss a Rico Bronya by always subscribing. Thank you very much for listening, downloading, and hanging out with us on episode 486 of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.